MichaelZinneberry.org.
The Michael Zinneberry Show is being brought to you by 54 Towing, McGinn's Pistachio Land, and Alamo Crystal Clear Water and Ice.
This is Samuel Spade.
Now, what can I do for you, Mr. Cairo?
I'm trying to recover ornament that, shall we say, has been mislaid.
You're not hiring me to do any murders or burglaries, but simply to get it back.
There's a girl wants to see you. Mr. Spade told me about your offer for the Falcon.
After what happened to Floyd, I'm afraid to touch it except to turn it over to somebody else.
What exactly did happen to Floyd?
Have you any conception how much money can be got for that blackbird?
I know the value in human life you people put on it. Hey, what's this bird, this falcon that everybody's all steamed up about?
She didn't tell you what it did?
You saw Joe this morning?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I've got to keep in touch with all the loose ends of this dizzy affair, if I'm ever going to make heads or tails of it.
Be careful.
If I do this and get away with it, you'll have something on me that you can use whenever you want to.
And you deliver the falcon to me.
What would you see to $250,000? You aren't trying to strong arm me, are you, Tom?
It would pay you to play along with us a little, Spade. You got away with this and you got away with that, but you can't keep it up forever.
The only chance I've got of catching them and tying them up and bringing them in is by staying as far away as possible from you and the police because you'd only gum up the works. You getting this all right, son, or am I going too fast for you?
You may have the Falcon, but we certainly have you.
He tried to attack me.
You dirty, filthy liar! Police will be here any minute. Now talk.
Oh, why do you accuse us?
This isn't the time for that schoolgirl act. We're both of us sitting under the gallows.
What is it?
The stuff that dreams are made of.
Well, that was a little bit different. Something we opened with this morning. That is the trailer to the movie The Maltese Falcon. I had not seen that. Oh, my gosh. It's been so many years. Makes me want to watch it again. And we opened with that this morning. That is a movie that's referenced in the latest novel, just came out a week ago, and I think 6 months ago on Audible, The Downloaded, the newest by Hugo and Nebula winner Robert J. Sawyer. 26 years ago, I actually discovered the early works of Robert Sawyer, and over the years I have been very privileged to talk with him about his works, his novels, on numerous occasions. Recently I was cleaning out some old files, and I found half a dozen cassette tapes of those interviews that I'm going to have to digitize. I cannot imagine how much less enjoyable my years of reading would be if I'd never read Rob's books. He's the number one all-time worldwide leader in number of awards won as a sci-fi or fantasy novelist. At one time, he was Canada's only full-time science fiction writer. He's been called the Dean of Canadian science fiction. And somehow, if you read his autobiography on his webpage, SF Writer, he intuitively knew as a young man the importance of fair treatment to our planet's fellow human beings. He's considered a futurist. He has the uncanny ability to see far into the human horizon and predict not necessarily technology, as other sci-fi writers have done over the decades, but how mankind must change in our outlook and attitudes toward others. Today we're discussing, as I said, The Downloaded. It takes place 35 years into our future, and if that sounds far away, 35 years ago was 1989. This is unlike any book he's previously written. Rob takes us immediately into the inner thoughts and minds of the characters. And you know what? If we look in the mirror and actually admit it, we can, through these characters, see our own foibles, our own prejudices, and our own narrow-mindedness that we might not realize exists. But understanding them in those characters, we can make changes in our own lives. And Rob, I always start out to enjoy your books, and I come away with a change in my worldview.
Well, thank you. You know, it's very interesting. As we're recording this, I'm in Los Angeles teaching a week-long writer's workshop. I'm a judge for something called the Writers of the Future contest, writersofthefuture.com. And there are a bunch of other science fiction writers here also giving. I'm co-directing the workshop, but guest lecturers. And I always say, I write to change the world. But some of my colleagues say, I just write to entertain, or I write to give somebody an escape from the mundane concerns of their day-to-day life. And, you know, it sounds highfalutin. I write to change the world, but I do have an agenda, and I think science fiction is an important tool. It allows us to talk about issues, but because we put a distance of time or a distance of space, or maybe disguised at all with some kind of alien beings, we can talk about these very divisive issues that have riven the country into, you know, these two completely opposed camps that are opposite each other on everything, and talk about what's really at stake instead. And I find it a very, very, not just satisfying and entertaining, but yes, important way to address issues.
Well, and in that, you have a character. Well, first of all, I, as you know, I don't like to discuss every aspect of what happens in the book, the plot line. That's for the reader to enjoy and understand. But the basic premise of the book is consciousness, for various reasons, for those serving a prison sentence. There's a killer in this book. It's a lot less encumbrance financially upon the state to house someone, feed them, and so that consciousness can be put into a device that allows the body to be in cryogenics, and when it comes time for release, then the consciousness is put into the body. You have astronauts who are experiencing this. One of them is an astrophysicist, and that kind of is the premise of the book, The Downloaded.
That's right, and the big thing about uploading these prisoners' consciousness is we also play around with the time perception. So they, each of the prisoners in this, it's a pilot project, first time ever being done, 20 years will pass for them, which is the amount of time the judge or the jury decided they had to serve for their crimes, but only 18 months will pass in the real world. So the incentive for the prisoner to sign up for this is, hey, look, you've got a little girl, she'll still be a little girl when you come out. You have a job set that actually is employable right now. Well, how many of our job sets are going to be employable 20 years down the road? Our education will be obsolete, or AI will be doing it all. You'll be out back in the workplace in 18 months. You'll have paid your debt to society, and you will have suffered or been rehabilitated, or however you look at it, for two decades of your subjective time. But for the society and the planet as a whole, only a year and a half will have gone by. So it's kind of, you know, these guys are definitionally losers. They have lost. They have been convicted criminals. They have failed at our social contract. And yet it's a win-win scenario for both the state and for the prisoner to try and do it this way.
You depict basically the cream of society and the scientists, the astronauts, versus the dregs of this society, as you mentioned, the murderer, the killer. And when the book opens, you take us immediately into their inner thoughts. And their inner thoughts are things that we experience every day, hopes, dreams, what's happened in their life to get them to this point. And slowly those start to get closer and closer to the premise of the book and the intermingling of all these different characters into one common goal.
Yes, exactly. You know, the thing is that we all, I was very much, of course, I'm a space buff, obviously, Cloudcraft, New Mexico, you have to be a space buff down there. We are fascinated by astronauts. We're fascinated, and Thomas Wolfe put this phrase to them in his famous book that became the movie and then subsequently miniseries, The Right Stuff, The Right Stuff. And, you know, it's so, I came to be aware as the decades went by from when I first read Wolf's book and so on and so forth, that the right stuff and what we now call toxic masculinity really coincide in an awful lot of ways. Whereas I've been privileged a couple of times to actually go into prisons and speak to prisoners. And most, you know, yes, there absolutely are people who are just nasty, awful human beings, some in jail. And there also are people who have been not dealt a good hand in life and have made stupid mistakes, and sometimes those stupid mistakes fueled by addiction or alcoholism or other factors that maybe we can say is, you know, you should never have succumbed to those things. Well, there, but for the grace of whatever random forces of nature there are, go I, right? So I came to realize that I actually had a lot more sympathy for people who had somehow not fit in and not worked out their life properly than for these MIT and Harvard grads, you know, at the top of their class who had been ruthless and cutthroat in getting ahead of everybody else to be branded as the best of the best and having the right stuff. And that's kind of the parallel or the juxtaposition I have a lot of fun with, I think, in the novel.
You address a lot of different social issues, and one of them is what we're talking about right now, and that is what makes someone what they are. For Roscoe, the murderer, you write, each was guilty, but always with some extenuating factor, a bad upbringing, an incompetent lawyer, a noble necessity for committing their crime. He sought out his childhood bully and got revenge. Then you write, as good as the programmer had been, though, the conversations with these others became repetitive as the years went by. Fortunately, once in a while, one of them got paroled and some new simulation took his place. So they're experiencing life in a different way. And for me personally, would I want my consciousness to go on in a situation such as that?
Well, of course, the prisoners have no choice.
Right.
I mean, they either have to go to physical brick-and-mortar jail or they have to do this. This is the whole thing about being a prisoner or being a convict is you have – society has decided you no longer have those three fundamental rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The state now dictates what percentage of life you get left to live if it's a capital punishment crime. You have no liberty until you've paid your debt to society. And pursuit of happiness, sorry, we want you, there's a retributive nature to prison. We want you to suffer. We want you to be punished. So those big three, the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, are by law, and we feel generally the public, justifiably so, taken away from these individuals. But they're still human beings. They still are feeling, thinking, and often repentant. Often very sad and sorry for what they have done. Or if they aren't at the beginning of their sentence, we're hoping that they don't just come out more bitter, more angry, and more likely to offend, but less bitter, more coming to recognize how much, if any, was their own fault in what they did. And it's supposed to not just be retribution, but rehabilitation. Prison is a fascinating concept, and we've been, you know, it's one of those things that technology has done very, very little to change. Almost everything else we do in our life, Mike, has changed radically in the last century. Prison, you throw a guy in the prison today, it's not that much different than throwing a guy in prison 500 years ago. I wanted to look at alternatives to that.
Well, our recidivism rate is so high because people get out and a lot of them do want to change, but it's easy to fall back into old habits because no one wants to be their friend. No one wants to give them a job. So they go into what is comfortable, and pretty soon they're back in the same situation.
That's right. I mean, you know, we talk a lot about old movies here. The Shawshank Redemption is a great example of, you know, at the end of your sentence, you're just kind of turfed out, and they walk out the door, and, you know, good luck to you if you can find a job. Good luck to you if anybody you ever knew is still around or alive or cares or wants to associate with you.
You are an expert at taking people, I think, that you know, taking their qualities and writing them into your characters. I saw Dr. Jürgen Haas. I saw you in him.
Interesting. Thank you. He is, in the novel, of course, there's a starship crew that has also uploaded their consciousness into a quantum computer, and their bodies have been cryogenically frozen, and they think they're heading off on an interstellar voyage. And there was no deception in what they were planning to do. They were supposed to. And then there's a civilization-ending catastrophe, and so they never go on their journey, but they're still, their minds are uploaded, their bodies are frozen. And Jürgen Haas is the ship's doctor on the starship Hukulea, which is a Hawaiian word, a famous Hawaiian adventuring seafaring vessel. It was called the Hukulea, and that's the name I happen to give to Earth's first starship. But yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's always cracking jokes, which it may not have been particularly funny interviews so far, Mike, but I try to make people laugh every day of my life. And he is very much torn between a sense of duty to the things that he's supposed to do as ship's doctor and saying, yeah, I kind of like this uploaded life. I kind of like being able to pursue whatever my interests are. And he's living in a virtual reality where he can conjure up whatever he wants to do and whoever he wants to be surrounded with. It was a very fun character to write.
they are in their situation in the plot of the book. Society has had a technological collapse. And it's something, I actually heard a news story this morning on the radio about concerns if the grid ever goes down, what that affects. That affects being able to buy fuel, food, electric vehicles. It's very easy these days for society to suffer a technological collapse. We read about hackers coming into the system from other countries and the great potential for that to actually occur. And so in reading The Downloaded, it makes one, I think, personally, at least it did me, more and more aware of how not just humans around us are fragile, but our entire dependence on technology as well.
There's a bit that I quote in the novel. I attributed it to a character, but it's real. I'm lucky enough to be friends with Mike Lazaridis. Mike Lazaridis is the co-founder of Research in Motion, which was the company that became BlackBerry after their premier product, the BlackBerry, the world's first smartphone. They were based in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada, about an hour from where I live in Toronto. And I was having dinner with Mike maybe 15 years ago. And I was trying to be a bit cheeky, like my character, Jürgen Haas. And I said to him, Mike, what are you thinking, man? You put the headquarters of your company that makes smartphones in Waterloo, Ontario. Well, Waterloo happens to be completely surrounded by old order horse and buggy Mennonite communities, very similar to Amish, Mennonite communities. And so what were you thinking, putting your headquarters surrounded by people who will never, ever use your product? And he said, no, Rob, you don't understand. The Mennonites, the non-technological people, they're the backup plan for humanity. When this all comes tumbling down, he didn't say yet, he says, when this technological society of ours all comes tumbling down, they'll still be there and will sail on through just fine. Hmm. And that had been lodged in the back of my brain for, as I say, a decade and a half since Mike had said that to me. And finally, I found the perfect novel to use it in. So as you know, in The Downloaded, besides the astronauts that we've talked about, and besides the prisoners, the convicts that we've talked about, who are now dealing with the fact that their technological civilization has collapsed while 500 years have passed when they were in suspended animation, the Mennonites have sailed on just fine. And it is interesting, we talk about the fall of civilization as if there's only one. We have a lot of different civilizations on this planet, not all of whom have become addicted to smartphones and electric vehicles and electric heating and microwave ovens. There's some people who will do quite well when this all probably, possibly, let us hope not soon, falls apart upon us.
I found that particularly interesting because my parents, when they retired, not far from where I grew up, retired in a small town, which is a Mennonite community.
Oh, wow. Yes.
And they're out there farming. There are fields for miles and miles of soybeans and corn, strawberries. They're still plying their craft, although maybe a bit more, you know, instead of horses pulling plows, but with tractors. But they're still plying their craft as their forefathers did.
Absolutely. And you know, there's a lot of references in the novel because I'm an old movie buff, you're an old movie buff, and I had the joy of making a couple of my characters old movie buffs. But one movie I didn't reference, but was certainly in the back of my mind, was the Harrison Ford movie Witness. Now, it's not about the Mennonites, it's about an Amish community in Pennsylvania that Harrison Ford, as a detective, John Book, investigating a homicide, has to infiltrate, in essence, to see if possibly the criminal is hiding in there or some such plot contrivance. But, you know, the thing about Amish and Mennonites that also is a huge contrast to so many of us these days is they are peaceful. They are, you know, there's a lot of debate about it, whether politicians in various capacities these days who are claiming, oh, yes, you know, the supremacy of the Bible, the supremacy of Christian teaching, but have forgotten, turn your other cheek, have forgotten, you know, that Christ was a man of peace, not of violence. But the Mennonites still very much retain that. And literally, you know, they don't fight back. They, of course, were all conscientious objectors in World War II and so forth. And I find that, again, such a contrast. These peaceful, serene people who we think of sometimes dismissively as being somewhat weak and ineffectual, versus the astronauts, who, again, we say have this quote-unquote right stuff that often turns out, in fact, in many situations, to be the wrong stuff.
The characters, at some point, because of a situation, are all brought back into their bodies. And I got a good chuckle out of they've lived, well, the prisoners, not the idyllic life, but all of a sudden they're back in their bodies. They need food. They can't regulate their energy levels. They realize we get tired. Some of them, their baser instincts start to take place. There's a situation with one who, as soon as he's out, decides to commit what we would call a crime. Languages, the Mennonite woman speaks a little bit different languages. There are those to contend with. And so the things that make us human beings that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, suddenly they are re-experiencing those.
Yes, absolutely. You know, every science fiction novel, despite whenever it's putatively set, we say this novel, you know, starts 35 years in the future and they're frozen accidentally for 500 years. So the novel moves ahead to the 25th century, the 26th century. We say, you know, that science fiction is about these future times, 2001, A Space Odyssey, about, you know, the year 2001, not 1968 in the movie. It isn't, never is. Science fiction is always about the year in which it was written or filmed. And in my case, I was writing The Downloader. This was my COVID project. And for me, what I was wanted to deal with was the fact that, in essence, we had all started living uploaded lives. We had stopped going, in many cases, into the office. We were now working virtually at home. We had stopped going to social gatherings. We started spending way more time talking to our friends on social media, by Zoom, by Skype, by Facebook Messenger, by FaceTime, what have you. We had stopped going out and being social creatures and started living in our own little, many of us weren't going out of our homes at all. So we had, in essence, become metaphorically uploaded into our own little virtual prisons. But we all knew, we didn't think it was going to take as long as it did to deal with this pandemic. But we all knew the pandemic was going to come to the end. Humanity's faced pandemics in the past, and those who were lucky enough to survive the pandemic, you know, it's over and we go on. So I knew, even while I was writing this during COVID, that at some point we were going to have to face the reality of coming back to physical interaction with other human beings. But the experience of being isolated would have changed us in some way, so that maybe we weren't quite as forgiving of the foibles of our coworkers. Maybe we weren't quite as comfortable with all the social interaction that we used to do. And in The Downloaded, I get to have a very metaphoric treatment of this uploading and downloading that all of us really did in the last few years, with characters who really uploaded into a computer and really downloaded into a very changed world. And it was a lot of fun to write that parallel.
In The Downloaded, we're up to COVID 50.
Exactly. You know, I mean, people forget COVID 19. Why is it called COVID 19? Because it broke out in the year 2019. So there will be another COVID. And I'm from Toronto, Canada. We had a huge outbreak of SARS, a different respiratory virus, in, I think it was 2002. And of course, you know, there are plagues before and after that worldwide. But this is not the end of this. This is not the end of humanity. We think of ourselves, of course, as the pinnacle of creation and the top of the food chain and in charge of everything. Little viruses and germs remind us periodically, nope, when Mother Nature wants to knock us down a bit, Mother Nature is more than content to do so.
We're going to take a break. We will come back from this break with the trailer to the movie Death of a Gunfighter. My first job was as a drive-in theater. That'll tell you how old I am. I got to chase the cars who went in the exit and demand they give me some money. We're doing that because there's a character who identifies himself as Alan Smithy, and you can explain the significance of Alan Smithy when we come back.
To know that I was able to succeed as a parent for basic needs because I had that help. New Mexico's Modern Child Support Services Division works to benefit both parents for the purpose of improving children's lives.
We established paternity, and then they were able to assist me in setting up child support payments that not only was agreeable to me, but the my daughter's biological father. It helped me help her thrive. It helped me be the best parent I could be.
Visit yes.nm.gov today.
They are our cuddlers and co-workers, purr machines and love bugs, and constant companions. They are our pets, our family, and they make life so much better. When we face unexpected challenges in life, so do our pets. That's why we're on a mission to support people who love their pets, and the pets who love their people, ensuring these families stay exactly where they belong, together. And you have something to offer. With an open heart and mind, there is nothing you can't do. There's no gesture too small or too big when it comes to helping. Whether donating a bag of kibble, sharing an Instagram post of a lost cat, or welcoming a foster pet into your home, every bit of kindness counts. You can help keep pets and people together. Visit petsandpeopletogether.org to learn how to be a helper in your community. This has been a public service announcement brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
If you are 45 and older, don't let stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Whether you have a vehicle stuck on the side of the road, or worse, down a ravine, whether you have an RV, a tiny econo car, a big rig, even a motorcycle, or anything else in between, call the experts in towing and recovery, 54 Towing. Locally owned and operated, Amy and her crew will get you unstuck or hauled to a repair shop. Program this number into your cell phone so you always have a rescue at your fingertips. 585-9097. That's 585-9097. 54 Towing. We don't want an arm and a leg. We just want your toes. 585-9097.
This gunfighter was the law for 20 years, until a hate-ridden town took the law into its own hands and turned on the gunfighter. Richard Widmark, rebel with a badge in Death of a Gunfighter.
We don't have any law in this jerkwater town. He's the law.
Come get me, Frank.
This gunfighter lived by the law of the gun. Now the town plotted to use it against him.
Hey, Jake. Mr. Oxley, he's
out
gunning for the
marshal. Lena Horne, the only woman in town with the courage to support him.
I want to marry you.
After all these years, why are you just asking me today?
I tried my damnedest not to kill him.
Does it matter?
It matters that you believe
me. Isn't it more important that they believe you?
I don't care what they believe.
This gunfighter throws a penetrating spotlight on the behavior of an entire town in the manner of High Noon and reveals the hidden motives that make one man the town's target.
Frank patches your conscience and you fellas are afraid.
We want him out right now.
I'm asking you to resign before they kill you. Get the hell out of here, Lou.
Resign, you idiot!
That is the trailer to movie Death of a Gunfighter, which I mentioned I saw at a drive-in theater when I worked there. I can remember seeing some of those great old movies. Cat Ballou was one of them. Rob, you tell us who Alan Smithee is. I'll be honest, I thought it was a joke. I said, that can't be real. And so I looked it up, and you're right on the money.
Absolutely. So I happen to be, besides a novelist, I'm also a scriptwriter. I'm in the Writers Guild of America. And if we don't like what a producer or a director or a studio or an actor does with the script we turn in, we're free to put any name at all we want on that script. And it says in our contracts, if we choose to use a pseudonym, you got to use whatever we say. In fact, the great science fiction writer Harlan Ellison, whenever somebody did something awful to one of his scripts, he used his pen name Cordwainer Bird, as in giving the bird to the studio. And they had to do it. But for directors, the Directors Guild contract with the production community for many years allowed only one pseudonym. If you weren't happy, you had to put this name on the film, not on one of your choice. And that name was Alan, A-L-A-N, Smithy, S-M-I-T-H-E-E, Alan Smithy. So if you go to IMDb and look for films directed by Alan Smithy, you will see a list of some of the worst turkeys of all time. But also occasionally a film that you might actually have quite admired, but the director, for whatever reason, got angry at the studio or whoever and decided, I don't want anything to do with that. I'm not going to put my name on it. You have to put Alan Smithy. And I have a character, of course, who's a criminal, doesn't want to reveal his real name because he had, in fact, been a notorious criminal. And so when people ask him, what's your name? He says, Alan. Alan Smithy. And he thinks he's an old film buff. He suspects nobody's going to recognize that. But he ultimately does get recognized that that's who he is, that it's a pseudonym.
And Alan Smithy, quote-unquote, directed Death of a Gunfighter.
There you have it. Yeah. I haven't had the joy of seeing that particular gem. I've seen some other Alan Smithy films, and it is an experience, you know. There's a certain, we all take a certain a joy in really bad films, right? Obviously, famously, one of the worst films of all time is the science fiction film Plan 9 from Outer Space, right? There was a movie made about the making of that movie that was a great film called Ed Wood. Martin Landau won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for Ed Wood for playing Bela Lugosi, who was the star of this horrible, horrible film, Plan 9 from Outer Space, that ironically did not get the Alan Smithy name put on it. The director, Ed Wood, was proud of that turkey.
I loved Ed Wood. I thought that was a wonderful film. I used to have it on VHS, and then it broke. And I just, if I could ever find a copy on DVD or on a streaming service, I'd like to see that again.
It's a terrific film, and it's funny you should say that because, and you mentioned earlier you'd interviewed me for, you know, over almost a quarter of a century now we've been doing this, Mike, and I'm so grateful for your support. But now, going to digitize the old cassette interviews or the VHS tape broke. We thought in this technological revolution that everything was going to be, permanently preserved. And the fact is, no. Our technology, even the hard drives we use now, the solid-state drives, the server farms, and when you say, don't worry, it's safe in the cloud, all it means is that it's safe, you think, on somebody else's physical computer in another physical location. So much of our culture, our history, everything is quite at risk of being lost if our current ability to read the data disappears for one reason or another. It's whereas we go back and, oh, the Dead Sea Scrolls. We just had, you know, old scrolls from Vesuvius, from Pompeii that have been buried by the Vesuvius eruption that they're managing to read now. We have stuff, an easier time in some ways reading stuff that's 100 years old than we have stuff reading stuff that's 50 years old. And that was never what anybody intended.
My favorite character, I read them all. I thought, what is my favorite character in this book? And that's Valentina Solomon. She's named after Valentina Tereshkova, the first woman in space, who in her, two or three days in orbit, had more time in space than all of the American male astronauts to that point put together. And so it was a huge propaganda coup for the Soviet Union. She came to be in that position because she had been a parachutist. Her father died, I think, during World War II, and she managed to turn a bad situation in life into a very successful one. She's still alive and a very successful career. And I think that's why I saw that determination in Valentina Solomon. But also, we've been talking about some of the current issues that you address in our society today through the book, The Downloaded. And that is the trans issue. Valentina wakes up as Downloaded, but not it, where she left it.
That's right. And in fact, yes, she chose the name Valentina. I never say the character started as male and uploaded their consciousness into this virtual realm where they spent a period of years there and with no real other people around them. There were other people, but they were conjured up from their imagination and presented in the virtual reality the way there are all kinds of figures around you when you play a computer game, non-player characters that aren't real, but may seem very real. And that person came to realize that they were intended, they felt, to be female. And in the virtual world, we're able to immediately express that femininity, that female form, and decided to choose a first name that of somebody they greatly admired, Valentina Tereshkova, as you say, the first woman in space. And then it all comes tumbling down, as I said, you know, all these people are forced back into physical reality, which means that after having lived in this virtual existence as the woman she felt she always had been, she's suddenly forced back into that male physicality that that she had abandoned and transitioned from. And it was an enormously difficult character to write. You never want to be offensive. You never want to, do any, for one thing, you never, we have the phrase dead name, and it's considered very bad form to use the first name of somebody who has transitioned to a new name. And I have people in my family and I have friends who have done this, and I'm a man in my 60s. I try so hard never to screw up and use the wrong pronoun or the wrong first name. Happens every once in a while, and you have to know, you know, that the person who's made this mistake is doing it out of honest error, not out of any kind of vindictiveness, right?
Yes.
But it was so wonderful to write this character. You say that she's your favorite in all the characters. I think she's my favorite, too. Valentina Solomon. And it was an agronomist, actually, an expert in farming. She was going to be a scientific farming. She was going to be helping the space colony she thought she was going to establish. But yeah, I really enjoyed touching on that. But I had to say, some of the reviewers, you know, you mentioned it came out on Audible 6 months ago, and there certainly is a lot of anti-trans sentiment out there. And people who attacked the Downloaded and the audiobook version were simply having the temerity to present what I thought was a ultimately heartwarming and charming story about somebody finally getting to be who they really wanted to be. It's all this woke nonsense of this liberal and Sawyer, he's a Canadian and he's blah, 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 and the gay agenda, blah, blah, blah. And I was stunned to find that people, that there still really is that much prejudice, the only word you can use for it, against people who are doing nothing at all that bothers anybody else. Why should your life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness means everybody, unless you've been deprived of those from a court of law, everybody is entitled to their own definition of what their own personal happiness should be.
We've got to take another break. We're going to come back here and talk about, I guess we're running out of time. I just love talking with you. It's like sitting down at a restaurant and two people discussing issues. And we will come back with Song of the South, the movie, and discussion with Br'er Rabbit, because James Baskett, who was an African-American man, sings that song in the movie. Zippity-Doo-Dah is the song. And he also voiced the Br'er Fox character. And this addresses the issue of historically the movie depicted that slaves were happy in their lifestyle. And you just don't find this movie a lot of places anymore because of that. And then in the time we have left, you can give us a clue in as to why these characters are being put back into their bodies and what they're facing. So we'll come back. Rob Sawyer is my guest. He is a member of the Order of Canada?
That is true. Yeah. The highest honor given by my government.
And that's akin to being what? Knighted in England?
Clinton Knighted in England, Presidential Medal of Freedom in the United States. It's the top honor given by the government. Yes, and I'm the first person ever to be given that for work in the science fiction field. The second, of course, you have to be Canadian to be Lord Kenneth. Second was William Shatner for being Captain Kirk.
No roadblocks are scheduled today on Highway 70, 54 South, or 380. For the latest roadblock information, call 575-678-1178. Today's forecast is calling for sunny skies, partly cloudy tonight in Alamogordo. High of 87, low of 59 for Cloudcroft. High of 69, low of 43. For tomorrow, mostly sunny, a little breezy. Alamogordo tomorrow, high of 88, low of 57. Cloudcroft tomorrow, high of 71 and an overnight low of 41.
Michael Shinneberry here. Join me for live and local discussions every Tuesday and Thursday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. on Alamo Sports and Talk, 1230 a.m. and 101.9 FM. If it's local events, we talk about it. If it's politics, local, state, or national, we talk about it. Pick a subject, we talk about it. We're now streaming online at alamosportsandtalk.com. It's the Michael Shinneberry Show every Tuesday and Thursday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. only on Alamo Sports and Talk, 1230 a.m. and 101.9 FM.
I had an important job. And it wasn't just a job, it was keeping my brothers and sisters safe. And coming back, it felt like kind of thrown away. It's like you're useless. You know, we don't really have a need for you now because you can't really do anything for us. That's the way I felt. If it hadn't have been for Wounded Warrior Project, I honestly don't know if I would be here. It was the camaraderie that I saw and had. It was like I got my family back again. We all felt the connection, you know, like that brother and sisterhood.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Donna by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
In 2022, Oxfam will fight inequality to create a future of equal rights and equal treatment so that everyone can thrive, not just survive. At OxfamAmerica.org, learn how you can offer life-saving support to people experiencing crises right now while working to tackle the root causes of poverty and injustice for the long term. Together, let's make equality a reality at OxfamAmerica.org. Sponsored by Oxfam America.
Whether you have a vehicle stuck on the side of the road, or worse, down a ravine, whether you have an RV, a tiny Econo car, a big rig, even a motorcycle, or anything else in between, call the experts in towing and recovery, 54 Towing. Locally owned and operated, Amy and her crew will get you unstuck or haul to a repair shop. Program this number into your cell phone so you always have a rescue at your fingertips. 585-9097. That's 585-9097. 54 Towing. We don't want an arm and a leg. We just want your toes. 585-9097.
Zip-a-dee-dee-da, zip-a-dee-a. Wonderful feeling, feeling this way. Zoom, 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 zoom. Everything is satisfactory. Zip-a-dee-doo-da, zip-a-dee-ay. Wonderful feeling, wonderful day.
Howdy, Brer Red.
Who that called my name? Oh, hello, Uncle Remus.
Appears to me that you was in a powerful bad mood to go to the party.
I ain't going to no party, because I ain't going to be here. I'm going to leave this old place.
You mean you's leaving your old briar patch?
That I is.
The place where you was born and raised?
That I is.
You mean leaving for good?
That I... Ow! Now, see that? That old briar patch ain't brought me nothing but trouble. Ow! And more trouble. This where the trouble is, and this the place I belongs away from.
Don't you know you can't run away from trouble?
Well, I'm glad there ain't gonna be no trouble.
There ain't no place that far.
Just the same, I done made up my mind, and I ain't never coming back. Well, so long, Uncle Remus.
Sure hope you know what you was doing.
Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself.
He left his old troubles behind, all right, but he was heading straight for a whole mess of brand new troubles.
That is James Baskett singing Song of the South from the Disney movie Zippity-Doo-Dah and voicing Br'er Rabbit. He would die at a fairly young age, I believe, in his mid-40s. Life was hard. That song depicts how happy slaves were. Racism, I have just never understood it. Racism is one of the things that you address in this particular novel, your newest, The Downloaded, which came out a week ago. You write at the beginning of the book, you quote James Kerwin, any civilization's collapse begins the moment its people start to ask themselves, does this bring me joy, rather than does this bring others joy? And certainly the Jim Crow laws and everything else of that era did not bring folks of that race joy.
If there's one word that I'd like people to apply to my work, it's empathetic. My work is full of empathy. I love getting to understand other people. And it was astonishing to me. The reason we bring up Song of the South in the Downloaded, my novel, is a discussion of the fact that we used to convince ourselves of certain things being true that simply now we know are not true. We discard that paradigm, to use a fancy $10 word for it. And this paradigm that even the Walt Disney Corporation was not that long ago, 70 years ago, telling to the public that, oh, yeah, you know, the people who were slaves nonetheless were happy, joy-filled folks who had songs in their hearts, Song of the South, zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day, my, oh, my, what a wonderful day. No, they woke up in misery and hated the fact that they had been deprived of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness by a country that claimed that all men, and implicitly women, were created equal and were endowed with unalienable rights, except if your skin happened to be a certain color. So I want people to be thrilled by the action and the plot and entertained by the jokes and so forth in the Downloaded, but I do always use my science fiction for social comedy. You mentioned the transgender issues that are very much in the news these days, and, you know, especially brought back into the forefront after the murder of George Floyd, the issues of the fact that we still are pretending that we live in a Disney-like world when, in fact, there's a lot of disparity still on racial issues.
And the reason that all of these, without giving away the ending, the reason that all of these characters from their many different areas of society come together?
Yes, because they, you know, all of them were supposed to decant after the astronauts, when their starship had reached the nearest star to our sun, Alpha Proxima Centauri, 4.3 light years away, and the prisoners when they served their sentences. But because civilization had fallen, nobody was there, no prison wardens were around. The last thing they cared about were these uploaded guys. They were off gouging for food out there. And the space agency and everything had collapsed. It was gone. So they all end up decanting back into a post-apocalyptic civilization where the Mennonites are still around, as I mentioned, but not many other people. And they're just 36 astronauts and 48 prisoners, and they have to learn to work together because that's all that is left. The people with what Thomas Wolfe called the right stuff, and the people who the law has said have the wrong stuff, and they're forced together because they're the only survivors. A little bit of, you know, Lord of the Flies with adults kind of thing. And I thought the sparks that flew off these two communities interacting would make for, I hoped, a very good dramatic novel.
And in a minute, we'll go out with the trailer to the movie Beneath the Planet of the Apes. If you want to know why, you'll just have to read the book.
That's right. As my character, who had used the name Alan Smithy, says, it's an underrated film. It is. I think it's, you know, everybody agrees the 1968 Planet of the Apes, pure genius. The sequel, that's an underrated film. It's actually a very interesting film in its own right.
And to me, it had something into what happens at the end. So I just encourage people to read that. I have to tell you, we give at the New Mexico Museum of Space History. We take people on buses out of the Trinity site a couple times a year. The site of the first atomic bomb explosion. And I give tours at the museum. Every one of those tours, when we get to the site or the floor with the Trinitite on it, I bring up the Oppenheimer alternative. I have probably spoken of that book to more than 1,000 people.
Thank you. This is, of course, being my novel immediately before the download of The Oppenheimer Alternative by Robert J. Sawyer. Yes.
Hey, thank you so much. It's always Christmas at my house when a new Rob Sawyer book's come in the mail.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate your support so much. Thank you.
A planet where apes evolved from men? There's got to be an answer.
Don't look for it, Taylor. You may not like what you find.
The year, 3,955. Charlton Heston as Taylor, a 20th century astronaut, space wrecked in the incredible future. Linda Harrison as Nova, a savage beauty from the enslaved and voiceless human race.
They're marked for target practice.
James Franciscus as astronaut Brent on a reckless mission to rescue Taylor, trapped by the swaggering, brutal master race of apes who dominate the Earth, a planet shattered by the atomic war of a distant, forgotten past.
Into the Forbidden Zone. Someone or something has outwitted the intelligence of the guerrillas.
Invade! Invade!
Face the terrifying dangers of the Forbidden Zone with them. Engulfing you in the shattering experiences that await beneath the planet of the apes.
Well, there's an intelligence working in this place. They know we're here.
We are determined to know what the apes want. War or peace?
The super intelligent mutants. Are they human or something else? In their church, an unspeakable god.
A doomsday bomb.
Behind their faces, an unbearable secret.
We don't kill our enemies. We get our enemies to kill each other.
The irresistible war machine of the guerrilla army versus the devastating secret mind weapons of the subterranean mutants. In civilization's final battle, to answer the ultimate question, can a planet long endure, half human and half ape? Is it the beginning or the end?
We are almost out of time. I want to certainly thank our sponsors for allowing us to be here. Alamo Crystal Clear Water and Ice. You've probably seen the white van traversing the city streets, delivering their product at no extra charge. You only pay for the product itself. To many places, I personally have seen that van 6 days out of the 7 days of the week. I just haven't caught it on the seventh day yet. Alamo Crystal Clear Water and Ice, 2350 East 1st Street, 434-0085. Call them or stop by. McGinn's Pistachio Land. Pistachioland.com is a great website. It allows you to get extra special deals, and you won't find those in store, even though lots of specials in store when you stop in at one of their two locations, Highway 7054 toward Tularosa and 82 going to Cloudcroft. Doesn't matter how many people are in the store, they treat you like you are the only person in the store. I think our snow season is pretty much over. Doesn't have to be snow season for your car to have issues, and when you need